if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 141. This is our 2020 RSM Classic and Joe Berg Open episode. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and European Tour golf. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
We're all right. We might be joined by Barry O'Hanrahan later. He might pay us a flying visit.
Fingers crossed.
He's in a state of flux at the moment, so we'll see if Barry arrives. Clearly, it would be great if he does. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And, of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models. All available, you've guessed it, completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive your popularity of the show. We're available on social media. On Twitter, Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. I know many of you did over the Masters week, so welcome to new Facebook group members. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Just recorded the RSM Classic Show, which is out there in the ether. Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Now, we've had an absolute influx with the Masters. It's great. Thank you to all of you. I can't read them all now because we'd be here probably for a couple of hours. But I'm going to read a couple. The first one is from Bobby Law, 59. He is in the United States of America. Thank you for your time, Bobby. Much appreciated. Title, Insightful Masters Primer, 5 stars. Great episode to preview. The much anticipated 2020 Masters Tournament. Refreshing to hear data points and value plays instead of gut feelings. Here's to making some dollars this weekend. That was from Bobby Law 59. Brilliant. We don't go with gut feelings, do we, on this podcast, Paul? Was that Barry?
Occasionally. You've not heard my tips for this week, yeah.
Now, we've also had a review from someone who he's a peer in the golf betting fraternity on YouTube, on Twitter especially. He does his own Periscope show on a Wednesday night, and he gets thousands of viewers each week. He's been doing it for quite a few years now, and it's our old friend Nagel's Bagels. Now, he's taken time to write us a review entitled Americans and Euros Unite! 5 stars. Greetings from the United States. As somebody who takes my golf content very seriously to prepare for my own golf show, I would put this golf podcast as a must listen as you prepare your picks for the week. Steve and the boys do an outstanding job on course previews and correlations, course history, recent form statistics and market value. It is a very professional product and not the amateur hour you may be used to. Plus, you get that nice European flair that just convinces you they know what they are talking about, even when they pick Paul Casey at majors. Great work, chaps, and keep it up. That's from Nagel's Bagels, who we know is in New Jersey, United States. As I say, follow at Nagel's Bagels on Twitter. He does his Periscope show each and every Wednesday. I think it's 8 o'clock Eastern time, so 1 a.m. over here in the UK. But he always puts the show up on Twitter as a rerun, so you can always watch it on a Thursday morning. Brilliant for DraftKings content for you.
Very good. Yes, and thanks, Bobby, and thanks, Nagels, for your feedback. Very much appreciated. Paul Casey, hey? That was almost a prophetic comment, because that came through just when Casey was tearing it up at the Masters last week for 18 holes.
It did. It pinged through as Paul Casey was going nuts in the first round before his inevitable backward charge down the leaderboard.
Did have a giggle at the time that it seemed quite apt to see his name in there. But yeah, alas, Paul Casey couldn't hang on for his backers, could he? But,
you don't mean that, alas, at all. Alas, you don't mean that in the slightest. Yeah. I've actually added, you mentioned to this to me off mic, I've actually added, because I have a don't back at majors list, Paul Casey now firmly entrenched. I'm now going to add another player to that, Paul.
Oh, go on then.
Bubba
Someone
Watson.
Let you down last week.
Bubba Watson.
Oh, yeah, until the next time, Steve.
I can't have him, Paul. It's you. It's you every time. I've got to have Bubba. Bubba's hitting greens. Bubba's strokes gain numbers are through the charts.
Yeah.
Back him at a major and it's mud ball.
Yeah, he wasn't a happy chap, was he?
Nah, the mental, the brain just fried, didn't it? He started okay. I think he was 2 under through 6. You're thinking, good work, Bubba. And then it's all of a sudden, I think he had a mud ball on 13 or something, and it was poor from that point on.
The body language just wasn't right, was it? And so that was the beauty of that Masters app. You could go back and look at all this stuff, couldn't you? And and see exactly what was going on. And you know, the shoulders were shrugging, and the gesticulations were there right from the outset. And it was just, you know, you could tell from the minute those bogeys started coming in on Thursday that it just wasn't going to happen. And it's a shame, really, because he was playing some cracking stuff leading up to the
I think he was 2 under. Then he had a mud ball or something. Or he was 1 under or something like that. And then he had a mud ball on 13, apparently, and he didn't make the birdie. And from that point on, it was... Didn't he go bogey, bogey, double?
Yeah,
three consecutive holes.
Yeah. Yes. Game over.
Game over straight away. Eject. So, yeah, Paul Casey and Bubba. They're there. That doesn't mean to say I won't back Bubba like I do every year at Travellers.
No, we like
at a major. At a major. And do you know what? If Bubba's playing half decently and he's a 70-1 shot for a top 10 position next year at the Masters in April, I might take him.
I thought you just said you're never going to back him at a major again.
I'm already talking myself out of it, aren't I?
rip that post-it note up. No, I think I do get a little bit carried away with how I interpret Bubba Watson's form. I do admit that, Steve, so...
I think
apologies
we're still
if I influenced you there.
We're still living in the early, we're still back in 2012 and 2014-15 when he was one of the best players in the world. And now he's struggling to keep in the world's top 50 at the age of 42. So anyway, it's like everything, it's just a watching brief, isn't it? Masters recap, great tournament, very soft. The weather was kind of what we said it would be. Course was kind of what we said it would be. Although there was talk from players. I mean, I've categorised it as a bent grass green tournament, but there was lots of talk about the greens had a lot of Bermuda in them, so you had kind of a Bermuda base coming out through the bent grass top of the greens. It was all very strange, very November like.
Mm. Yeah, clearly. I mean, there were a few nuances, weren't they, with the way it was set up, with the grasses and the Bermuda grasses in the rough and fairway as well, which they would have expected ordinarily to have died away by this time of the year. And clearly,
it was still there.
It was still warm, wasn't it? And you know that and the rye grass and
The first cut looked like it was over 2 inches.
It was
quite lush in spots, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a little bit thicker. But I enjoyed it, and it felt a bit odd, as I expect everyone kind of appreciated with the lack of patrons there. What was even more odd was having the non-conventional pin on 16 on the final day, which I thought was really strange. you know, particularly for the players, or particularly for the punters, rather, who backed the hole-in-one, because that's the kind of cash cow that's been delivering each and every year for the last few years, that pin position on 16 on the final day. And the pin sheet came out and they'd stuck it at the back shelf, which was just, you know, to tops off a bizarre year with another bizarre decision, I guess. But we are where we are. Some impressive performances last week, though. I mean, well done to you getting Cameron Smith. That was a cracking pitch.
Do you know what? When he was two back, was it on 8 or 9? I actually started getting a proper sweat on, because when the round started, I had my usual, I guarantee he finishes in a tie for 9th sweat. And then he birdied a few of the first holes, and I'm thinking, well, actually, he's actually showing a set here.
Yeah.
He's actually showing that kind of scenario we were discussing in the podcast, where he has mixed it in majors in the past, and he's not going backwards here in any way, shape, or form. Clearly with the Masters app, it was easy. He had a real wobble the last three holes on Saturday, and it was his amazing short game that kept the card clean. Par, par, parred his way home. If that had been other players in some of the positions he ended up in with his approaches, there'd have been a couple of bogeys in there. So he kept the card clean, and he started great. And I'm thinking, wow, Cam Smith's actually keeping DJ honest here. But you just knew, people that win the Masters, like Tiger, Sergio, in the main, apart from that Patrick Reed aberration, they're either first or second in greens in regulation. And DJ was just, he was just all over it, wasn't he?
Yeah, too good.
Just
him,
all
he?
Over it. He's too good. And the way that he closed it, you know, not even bothering to go in two on 13 or 15, it's just everything's under control here, guys. I'm not going anywhere. That must be a little bit scary for some in the some of the pro golfers now, if DJ's going to show that kind of mental fortitude in majors.
Yeah, there's a lot of maturity there, wasn't there? And he still made enough birdies on the way home to give himself that cushion, didn't he? And even with a wedge in his hand, rather than being overly aggressive. So, you know, clearly played the right strategy and clearly played incredible. I mean, look at his stats. First for total driving, first for greens in regulation, first for ball striking. Fantastic effort. Fifth for scrambling, and he putted at 1.63.
He was ranked first for total driving, first for ball striking, first for greens in reg, first for all round. It was just dominant.
Yeah.
He's now got 24 PGA Tour wins, Dustin Johnson. He's level in the all-time list with Gary Player. And of active players, only Tiger, Phil and Vijay have more PGA Tour victories.
Yeah.
If you look at it from an agronomy split, 5 wins on Poa, 6 on a bent grass Poa mix. So that's 11 if you total those two up, which is by far the most on Poa putting surfaces of anybody. 6 on bent grass now, and 7 on Bermuda. Yeah, he just does everything, doesn't he? There's no weakness there. He hasn't even got a weak putting surface. It just doesn't matter.
No. Very, very impressive.
The only one he hasn't won on is Paspalham. And he's playing Maya Cobra in a fortnight. So he's going to be going off about 9-2.
Oh, you can put that right then.
Yeah.
No, I was very, very impressed. You know, clearly an emotional set of interviews after the event. And really good. I was pleased for him, ultimately. You know, we've looked at and talked about DJ a number of times in the past. And we've talked about how he's failed to put away major opportunities when they've presented to him in the past. But as you just said a second ago, perhaps that's a turning point for him in terms of his maturity and the way that he approaches and potentially adds to that over the next few years. Connors was interesting. Barry pointed this out to me.
You're trying to warm me up.
You were on in the week before. Yeah,
was it bogey, bogey, double, bogey, no, it was bogey, double bogey to end round three at the Houston Open, and all of a sudden at the Masters he's like, whoa.
Yeah, well, he started slowly again, but then a fantastic round on Friday to pull himself back into the into the tournament, well, back in the right side of the cup for a start, and looked really good. You know, take that first round away from him, he was absolutely flying, putting well as well, which was strange for Corey Connors because he doesn't putt that well. He's fantastic tee to green normally, isn't he?
Yeah, he has been putting a lot better. Mm. Going back to Dustin Johnson, par four birdie or better,
right?
Second last season. So that that par four birdie or better streak stat just continues to deliver. The one that I can, of course, get rid of now is that no world number one's won the Masters since 2002.
Mm.
So we're going to have to come up with some new content.
And only, 4 or 5 months to do it?
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, so yeah, all in all, I was really happy with Cameron Smith. I couldn't have asked for more. In fact, beyond my expectations at 80-1. I know a few of you were on him over at 100-1 and 100-1 plus, so well done for that. And I managed to scrag Morikawa and in the PGA at 33-1, and Cam Smith finishing second at the Masters at 80-1. So all in all, out of three majors, that's not a bad effort.
No, good return. Good return indeed.
Better than usual. What should we do first? Should we do RSM Classic? Or should we do the Joe Berg Open? Why don't we do the Joe Berg Open, Paul? Let's start with the European Tour. Why not?
Why not? Joe Berg Open. Start of our three events, South African swing that's been added to the schedule. Takes us all the way out to the Earth Course in Dubai, which will complete the season in 3 weeks or just over 3 weeks' time. So we've got the Joe Berg Open this week. We go off to Leopard Creek next week, which we've seen a number of times for the Alfred Dunhill Championship in the past. And then finally off to Sun City for the South African Open. So a bit of a change there. Normally we get the Nedbank Challenge at the Sun City track, but this time it's the South African Open that will be held there. They're running that event in parallel to a new additional event that's running at the Fire Course in Dubai, which is adjacent to the Earth Course.
Right.
For the final week that leads up to this, to the DP World Tour Championship. So that means that players are going to have a choice of events to take in the week before Dubai to see if they can make it through to the top 60 and qualify for that season end. So the European Tour have tried to make it quite an exciting finish to the season. It will be interesting to see what kind of composition you get in terms of the fields for both. Because I guess until that decision was made, the South African Open would have been quite a strong event, but I guess now a number of players will choose to go across and play the alternative track at the Jumeirah Golf Estates.
Did I read there were a couple of high-profile WDs from the player list for this?
I've not seen specifics yet. I mean, you've got the likes of Morikawa, you've got the likes of Reed, who will theoretically be there. As to whether they are there or not, we should see.
No, I was talking about this Joe Berg Open. I'm sure on Twitter there are a couple of pretty big names that were meant to play this week.
Justin Harding.
All of a sudden, they just disappeared.
Yeah, Harding was supposed to play this week. He was the main one, I guess. Of the players that were over in Augusta, only Christian Bezuidenhout, who's come over and playing this week. The rest of them who were in the field originally have pulled out. And which is a bit of a shame for it, because you ended up then with what is pretty much a kind of stock co-sanctioned event for the kind of European Tour, Sunshine Tour combination that crops up every now and again. Yeah. I guess, you know, this has been added so late to players' schedules, it's not surprising, really.
I found it. This is from Mike Miller at Smart Golf Bets. Rob McIntyre, Justin Harding, George Coetzee and Haotong Lee. WDs from the Joburg, and he's saying it must be to do with this, the fact that they're going to run consecutive events in Dubai at the end of the year.
Yeah, it does give, you know, if you're close enough to the top 60 or inside it, then you could take the view that just spending a fortnight in Dubai would be more sensible than coming over to South Africa first. But I don't know, we'll see. Yeah. It's, clearly it gives players two options as to how they're going to approach the potential qualification as we get closer to the date. But for now, Joburg opens the task at hand this week. Bezuidenhout, who is the clear favourite this week now, 14-1. Adrian Ntaghi, 20-1. Joost Luiten, 22s. Brandon Stone, 22s. Higo's 25s. Arnaud's 25s. Daniel Van Tonder, 25-1. Four wins he's got in his last six starts on the Sunshine Tour. He's going to be a popular pick this week, Van Tonder. Absolutely smashes the form stats on the site this week. Matthew Jordan, 25-1, 28-1, bar those players. It's a pretty open affair, though. I mean, the names mentioned above give you an idea of the type of quality of the field that we've got this week. And, you know, with the omission of those names that you talked about a second ago, it is a pretty weak affair.
How do these courses vary between these lower tier South Africa events? So how does these courses in Joburg compare to next week, the Alfred Dunhill? Or are they very, very similar?
No, well, the Leopard Creek is a different track altogether. They play it out by the Serengeti National Park. It's a fantastic event to watch, actually, if you get a chance to watch any of it next week. Whereas the lights of Sun City, you're back to the kind of the altitude of Joburg. Actually, yeah. They play a lot of these tracks, or a lot of the similar kind of location tracks, out on the South African Tour and the Sunshine Tour. So, you know, these guys that are coming along and playing this week will have a lot of experience on either these tracks or similar tracks.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that many of them are at a significant disadvantage in that respect. If anything, actually, they're probably at more of an advantage, having played in the conditions and the kind of tracks, or the exact tracks in the past. But, I mean, this week we're playing at the Rand Park Golf Club, which we've seen a few times recently. It was the one they used for the 2017 Joburg Open, the last time the event was played, which was won by Shubhanka Sharma. 2018 South African Open, won by Louis Oosthuizen. And then earlier this year, the South African Open at the beginning of 2020 was also played here. That was won by Brandon Grace. The difference is, there is a minor difference, I guess, worth noting anyway, that when we played those previous three events, and they were monster fields, typically over 200 players, up to 240 players, some of them. And they played across two tracks, the Firethorn track and the Bush Willow track, here at Rand Park. All of those three events I've just mentioned were on both of those tracks. Today, or this week rather, we're playing just at the Firethorn track, which is the longer and slightly tougher of the two. If you go to the site this week, there are two sets of stats for the Joburg Open. You've got the standard Joburg Open history stats, which is combined with current form. There's also a link on there to use for Rand Park form historically, because as we just said a second ago, there were some lower tier Sunshine Tour and Big Easy Tour events held here at Rand Park in the past. So some of the players in this week's field have got some more extensive history and form here on this particular track. Again, just to kind of emphasise the point, some of those events will have been played across both the Firethorn and the Bush Willow track. So, note of caution, but even so, clearly it's on the same piece of land and very similar characteristics. The track this week, Firethorn, is a 7,506-yard par 71. It is altitude. Typically, you can almost translate metres for yards at these kind of events over in Johannesburg. So that makes it around about 7,000, maybe sub 7,000 yards in reality. So it's not particularly long. It's a parkland track, trees, water, not particularly close to the fairways, but they are in play. And as I said, it is the tougher of the two tracks. When they've played the combination of tracks in the past, 23 under, 19 under and 21 under were the three winning scores. So it is scorable. Slightly tougher this week because we're playing just the longer Firethorn track. But even so, I suspect we're going to see a decent score required, kind of mid-teens and upwards, to get yourself in the mix, I think, by the end of Sunday afternoon. The temperatures this week, up to around about the mid-70s, there's rain and thunderstorms in the forecast. There could well be some delays. There could be some disruption to the event this week. So we're going to have to see how that goes. Winds 5 to 12 miles an hour. There's not much more than 12 miles an hour in the forecast this week. So that shouldn't be an issue. I suspect, if I were to put a number on it, I suspect somewhere around about 18 under might be the winning total this week, somewhere in that bracket.
Okay.
So, yeah, birdies, make some birdies, attack the par fives. I mean, generally, if you look back, we've got some stats from those three events that were played here that I mentioned a second ago. Generally, it's been short game and putting that's got the winners over the line here. It's a bit odd when you see the likes of Louis Oosthuizen up there as one of the winners. He won the 2018 event. He was runner-up in 2020 as well. Just to give you an idea, Oosthuizen, when he won, hit 35% of fairways. I mean, that's very Louis Oosthuizen-like, isn't it? You know, you wouldn't expect him to win a golf tournament when he's achieved those kind of numbers. 65% of greens when he won. Mm. Yeah, he got 74% of scrambling, which was fourth. And he was second for putting average that week.
Putted the lights out.
Yeah, which, you know, it's those numbers are all anti Oosthuizen, but clearly he managed to get round in that particular week. And if you look at the other two events as well, Sharma and also Brandon Grace, it was more down to the performance on and around the greens to get the winning total. Bit of wet weather this year. I think that greens and regulation may be a little bit more of a factor. I mean, the fairways should be softer. You should be able to play more approach shots that are holding the greens, and we should put a little bit more emphasis on proximity. And clearly, you're still going to need to be putting well on these bent grass greens. As I say, I think if you're going to be in the mix, you're going to be needing to make a number of birdies over the course of the 4 days. So you're going to need to be getting close to that kind of 18 under, maybe a little bit more, maybe 20 under, if it ends up being quite nice over the course of the 4 days. But that forecast is a little bit iffy, so remains to be seen. Other than that, we've got those last three events to go on. Again, there's history stats on the site for the Joburg Open, but prior to that, they were played at different tracks. So again, do take those with a pinch of salt. I've boiled it all down. I could have backed 7 or 8 here, to be honest, but I don't want to go too mad on this as we're getting towards the back end of the season. I backed 4 in total. The first one I backed, I'm reliably informed.
Paul, start with your long shot. Please start with your long shot. I thought he was a West Indian fast bowler, but it turns out he's a professional golfer.
My long shot then, Steve. Go on. Just for you. I'll do him first.
Break the habit of a lifetime. Out of sync. Go out of sync.
400-1 I got on this guy. Whoa. Malcolm Mitchell.
I just say, listeners, Malcolm Mitchell is currently 270 on Betfair Exchange.
He's been hammered on the exchange.
They've taken £3 on him.
It's 400-1 I got with him with Ladbrokes yesterday. There's still 350s. If you want longer prices, you can get 250, 300 on him. Wow. And he's a bit of a punt. He's a relatively unknown player and maybe a new name to many of you listening to it this week. But he has got 2 wins and 12 top 10s from 18 starts last year on the Big Easy Tour. And it's easy to disregard some of this lower tier stuff. You know, if you'd have disregarded Matt Wallace's performances on the Alps Tour, you'd have missed a lot of big performances and wins from his early part of his kind of formative career at the upper levels. And, I'd like to look through some of the lower tier form and see if I can pluck out the odd gem here and there. And you never know, it could be the one this week at a mad price. 2 wins, 12 top 10s, some 18 starts last year in a Big Easy Tour. Naturally, he got himself some starts on the Sunshine Tour as a result of that. For his 8 starts since lockdown on the Sunshine Tour itself, 4 top 20s. Included in that was a 5th place finish, which is his best as a professional. He shot a 65 to open on his last start on the Sunshine Tour as well. So clearly not, quite capable of mixing at that kind of level. And to me, this isn't a great deal higher, to be honest. It's not a massive difference between this and a Sunshine Tour event. We've got a few stats on him, not a great deal, but a few out there, which suggest that his long game's good, suggest that he's more of a green tee to green merchant. At 400-1, I'm happy to take a chance, see if he can produce something that's...
He's playing nicely, isn't he?
Yeah. You look at the form line, it's strong and clearly comfortable in this part of the world. And, one of the up-and-coming South African contingents. So we'll see how he goes at a mad, mad price.
Okay. Back to normal now.
Back to normal, yeah. At top of the shop then, the player I fancied right from the back end of last week was MJ Duffy. Now, if you're looking for him on the... on the list of the bookmakers. He's spelt D-A-F-F-U-E, so you may pronounce him Daffu. I'm reliably informed it's pronounced Duffy, so let's go with Duffy for now, and if I get proven wrong, then I'll correct that the next time I put him up in one of these podcasts.
Regulars will know, Barry's put this guy up before, hasn't he? In America.
Yeah,
because he's one of these guys that's homeless, isn't he? He's basically got no tour, and he's a bit like a hobo. So he Monday qualifies into everything, or tries to.
He's particularly good at it. It's a sad story, really, because he started off, he turned professional back in 2013, and he was fourth on his first Sunshine, his pro debut on a Sunshine Tour. He was fourth after day one, the following event in Joburg, this particular event, the Joburg Open. Drifted away a little bit, but clearly started off particularly well and looked like he was a potential prospect. And then not long after that, he lost his mother in a freak road accident and absolutely knocked him for six. He probably lost his way in terms of professional golf and did very little for the next 5 years. No status, as you'd expect. He married a Texan girl and has been living over in the US, but got no status. So as you said, he's been trying his hand at Monday qualifying. And as you know, it's a brutal process, isn't it? Even to get through to either the Corn Ferry or the PGA Tour events. But he qualified through Monday qualifying 9 from 14 attempts. So clearly he's well capable of shooting those low rounds. I think when Barry put him up, it was for a first round leader bet from memory. And that makes absolute sense in that kind of context, because this guy clearly can turn it on.
I think he put him up at the Sanderson, where he eventually finished 12th.
Yeah, quite possibly.
It's a cracking effort.
Yeah. Rings a bell now. Absolutely. Well, from
he was fifth after round one. Yeah.
Yeah. He's
65 in round one.
Yeah, he's right in the mix. I mean, it's that whole process. If you look at what he's achieved, 22nd at the Workday Charity Open, he was eighth there after three rounds. So he's right in the mix, effectively. 12th, as you said,
loaded that tournament.
Oh, he was. Yeah. 12th at the Sanderson Farms. He was fourth going into the weekend. So, as you say, he backed up that first round with another round after on the Friday as well. Sits fourth in the special temporary membership list in terms of qualifiers. So we know that Will Zalatoris has just made it through to the full tour as a result of that list. And he currently sits fourth in that list. Just to put it into context, how he's been doing over on the PGA Tour. And clearly this is a far, far, far lower grade than what he's been playing in over there. And if you're playing and performing and finishing, getting yourself into contention in proper PGA Tour events, then dropping down to the Sunshine Tour back in his homeland. And as you said, looking for a tour. He became a father in August. So perhaps that's going to focus his mind. Perhaps that's going to be the catalyst that he needs to find himself a kind of a home for a year or two to develop his game and move his career back in the right direction. We shall see. But, he could take care of a Sunshine Tour, European Tour card in one fell swoop this week if he were to win here. So, 40-1. I was quite pleased with that. I was also quite pleased with the price on Shubhankar Sharma. I mean, it's far more obvious pick, isn't it? But he opened up at 40-1, which I mentioned to you prior to seeing any of the prices, that I was expecting him to be amongst the top end of the market, and certainly not on the second tier of players down in the kind of 33, 40-1 bracket. The 40-1 didn't last, you must say, but 33-1 is still available right now. I took him with seven places each way at 33s. Again, the rationale for him is quite straightforward. He was the winner here in 2017. That was his first European Tour event. He followed it up a couple of months later in Malaysia with another strong win there. Quite comfortable shooting 20 under or thereabouts to get himself over the line. Not much since. He kind of went off the boil a little bit. But since lockdown, an improvement in form following lockdown, he made six cuts on the trot, a best of 13th at the Cyprus Open, missed the final cut at the Cyprus Showdown in his last start, but he's for three rounds of 67, 66, 69. There's no shame in that. They were decent. It was a brutal format, wasn't it, to get through to the final round of the Cyprus Showdown. He's playing some good stuff, and I was expecting him to be far shorter. So on value grounds, I'm quite happy to take Sharma and see how he gets on this week. And the other one, the final one, Scott Hend. I mentioned Hend on a podcast a few weeks back. I think it was following the Scottish Open, where he'd been playing some good stuff. He'd been putting particularly well. And I said he was one of the players that we should watch over the next few weeks. So I'm quite happy to put my money where my mouth is this week at 150-1. For a player who's won, was he three times on the European Tour, eight times on the Asian Tour over the course of his career, he is well capable of getting over the line when the opportunity arises. So, yeah, at that price, quite comfortable taking a punt on him. I mean, if you look back at his recent form, 11th at the Renaissance, which is the one I mentioned, decent putting performance there. 10th at Wentworth, which I don't particularly associate Scott Hendon Wentworth. It was a personal best for him. But he was fantastic from tee to green. His scrambling game looked really good as well. Clearly found something with his long game, which should set him in good stead as he comes to the back end of this part of the season with a live chance of qualifying for Dubai if he has a good final 2 or 3 weeks here. Some decent form at altitude too, a couple of playoff losses at Crown Saucier. Clearly that's a short track. And if you look through his record, then shorter tracks tend to be where he's got his best results. Ones that he tends to be able to try and bully. With the altitude this week, what do we make him? 7,000 yards. That's not long. That's right in his wheelhouse for Scott Hend this week, I think. And perhaps he'll be inspired by Cam Smith's effort last week. He was talking about it quite a lot on Twitter last week. And we've seen with the Australians in the past, once one of the guys pops up and shows some form, you often get a little bit of a bounce with the other Aussies around the world when they come to tee it up.
Yeah. So
perhaps he'll take some heart in that and take some inspiration and get himself into the mix here this week. So we shall see. But yeah, just to reiterate then, MJ Duffy, 40-1, Shubhankar Sharma, 33, Scott Hend, 150, and Malcolm Mitchell, 400-1, my four for this week. There were lots I could have gone with, Steve. Any catch your eye?
Well, I'm going to put, you're talking about great short game, yeah? I've got three, actually. You're talking about amazing short game. This particular player that I'm looking at, he was first for scrambling and eighth for putting average last time out at the Cyprus Showdown. Mm. He was third for putts per round, and he is trending big star. I'm seeing a 10th at Valderrama, an 8th in Portugal. He's then got 46-34, and he was 4th in that Cyprus Showdown.
Oh, I know you mean. Johannes Veerman, he was very close for me.
This talented American, yeah?
Yeah. I put him up at the South African Open at the start of the year, and I think he finished 13th, I want to say. Shot a fantastic opening round, I think, and I got all excited at a decent price and then kind of
jumped
away a little bit.
7th at last year's Alfred Dunhill. And then, as you say, 13th at the South African Open in January this year.
Mm. Yeah, so
looks good to me. The other two I'm interested in, and I mentioned one of them on a podcast a couple of weeks ago, is we're deep into Race to Dubai country, aren't we here? We're deep into top 60, get into the big money event at the Earth Course at the end of the year, yeah? And I'm seeing two Scottish players who are outside that top 60 right now, but they're close enough to have a real realistic run at it, and they are both South African masters. One of them is David Drysdale, who I'm seeing as big as 200-1, and he's receiving some cash this morning. He's 150-1 if you want seven places with Paddy Power. But you just look at David Drysdale's record in South Africa, and it's shockingly good.
Third in
09 at the Joburg Open, 8th at the Dunhill, Alfred Dunhill in 2010, third at the Joburg Open in 2012. He's got a 6th in the Alfred Dunhill in 2014, 7th in the South African Open in 2017, and then 2nd in the 2018 Alfred Dunhill. And it was noticeable that Cyprus event a few weeks ago. I think he was 3rd at halfway and 2nd after 54 holes down in Cyprus. Finished 10th in the end.
Yeah. It was... it's certainly been more prominent. You've seen that, particularly over the last month or so.
I think a lot of these pros, especially the older guys, they just kind of meander from week to week, month to month, and then they realise, well, actually, I'm only four or five events away from making the top 60.
Mm. Yeah,
that's a huge carrot, and that's a big payday, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if David Drysdale could get himself into that tour-ending event. That's good. That's very good Euro. So I think David Drysdale's a good punt this week, a big triple-digit number. And I mean, if you want it to go top 10 or top 20, that's your lookout. The other Scottish guy that always goes well in South Africa is Scott Jameson.
Yeah, he's been popping up a little bit recently as well, hasn't
he? He's, yes, this is the other thing, isn't it? I'm starting to see him popping up on leaderboards because Jameson's another one. He can disappear for months at a time.
Yeah.
His game seemingly can fall apart, or his confidence, or a bit of both.
Yeah.
But he's definitely popping up. I mean, I'm seeing him at 66 to 1 in a spot. I'm seeing him up still at 50s in a number of spots as well. And Jameson's record in South Africa is just incredible. Clearly, he won the Nelson Mandela Championship in 2012. There's a third at the Alfred Dunhill in 2012. Second at the Volvo Golf Champions in 2013. Recently, he's had a fourth at the Alfred Dunhill in 16 and a second at the Nedbank Golf Challenge in 2017. I remember that. That was the big money event, isn't it? The Nedbank.
Yeah.
And back in 2018, December, Alfred Dunhill third. So this is it. It's just full of top five finishes in South Africa.
He does love it, doesn't he?
He finds himself down in 79th spot in the race to Dubai. So a big week this week, and all of a sudden, again, top 60. We can get close to that big money event in the race to Dubai.
Yeah.
So those are three that I really like the look of.
As I say, I couldn't put you off any of them really. And Daniel Van Tonder, who I mentioned right at the start, winning four of his last six South African Sunshine Tour events was tempting. Marcus Armitage has been playing some nice stuff, and he's got some sneaky form here as well in the past. So. There's a number you could make a case for this week. So.
They've got some real young talent at the moment, haven't they, the South Africans? With Higo as well, Van Tonder. Mm.
Yeah, there's some good players. Stuff coming through. So I'm looking forward to this week's event, I must say. It should be a good one.
I've just about talked myself out, and it's my part of the show, the RSM Classic. I feel exhausted. Getting into my David Drysdale and Scott Jameson tip.
Yeah, just made a fantastic.
By the way, question. I wouldn't back either on the exchange personally. I would go fixed odds and just lock in the price, and because neither of them can. Well, I don't think Drysdale's ever won on the European Tour, has he?
It's a long problem, time ago. Isn't it? You're far more likely to get a return out of them as a kind of a backdoor. Top six or top seven,
And take
Sunday.
The each way. Just
yeah,
it's yeah. That's the way I'm backing both fixed odds, not on the exchange, which can be the way I often go. Right, the RSM Classic. Now, we see this event every year, Sea Island. It's the golfing commune of Georgia, isn't it? And, you know, Zach Johnson, Davis Love III, Matt Kuchar. There's a whole list of them. Harris English, Patton Kizzire. You know, they all live on Sea Island and probably don't pay a lot of tax. But and they've got fantastic golf courses here on the Atlantic coast. They've got the Sea Island Performance Centre, which is full of top level coaching talent, and a lot of players either use this as their home or they have a condo here or they just travel down here and get a lot of their practicing done. Now I've put a whole list in this week's preview of players that have got, you know, local links. Jonathan Bird, Brian Harman, Keith Mitchell. You like backing Keith Mitchell and he shoots nine over, don't you? JT, the postman, Poston, he's going to be popular this week. Hudson Swafford's another one. They all live on the island. And there's others that use it. Charles Howe III used to live here, and then he used it for practice, and he won this in 18. There's a lot of local links. But then we've got this influx because it's the week after Augusta. And guess what? Augusta, Georgia, isn't a million miles away from Sea Island. And there isn't a lot for the bigger players going on the European tour in terms of events that's going to, you know, turn them on to play. So we've now got Hatton playing this week. We've got Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood, Jason Day, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Shane Lowry, the Open champion, Matt Wallace, Lee Westwood. Even Andy Sullivan's flown over for this, which I found interesting. Sullivan's walked off away from the European Tour to play the PGA Tour this week. So he must have got some kind of special invite or something to come and play. So it's a stronger field than we usually see. And, you know, you can see that in the betting market. Webb Simpson plays this every single year, tends to finish second or third. He's being backed at 9-1. I'm not going anywhere near that. You can get a bit of 10-1 out there with William Hill White now on Simpson. Bound to be in there somewhere, isn't he? But then we've got Hatton at 18s. Sung Jae-im at 20s. Fresh off his second place at the Masters. Tommy Fleetwood at 22s. Russell Henley at 28s. Fitzpatrick at 28s. English at 30s. Jay Day at 33s with Louis Oosthuizen. We've got the Wunderkind, Joachim Niemann, 35-1. Straight off of his COVID failure to play at the Masters. That was a shame for him. So he could come back all guns blazing. Shane Lowry at 35. I like Lowry. He's playing some good stuff at the moment, tee to green Lowry. I know Barry was on him for the Masters, wasn't he? And actually, he was very, very high greens in regulation. He just couldn't get the putter working.
Yeah, and that's unusual for Shane because he's a very, very good putter when he gets going.
That was his best Masters result, I think, though, last week. I think he was was he mid-30s or late-20s, something like that?
Yeah, there's something percolating with Shane. I still think, personally, he needs to get this Open Championship defence out of the way before he can truly kind of free himself up.
Be rid of it.
Yeah. So he may have another 6 months or so to go, or 9 months. But there's some improvement, definitely.
It's a decent film. Munoz, we've got your darling boy, Corey Connors, Kevin Kisner, who we landed here, 22-1 a few years ago. Justin Rose at 40-1. Jason Kokrak, he was back to his putting prowess last week at the Masters. Two putting everything, 40-1. And then local man, Brian Harman. And we've got the other postman, Ian Poulter, 55-1. So it's a decent enough field at the top end. Mackenzie Hughes is playing as well. So there's some decent value lower down as well. And that to me is a real angle for this. But we'll go into that in a bit more detail in a short time. The golf course is split over two. We have the host course, which is the Seaside. The Seaside course on Sea Island Resort. That plays as a par 77,005 yards. It features Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. 12.5 on the stim. I think it's going to play firmer than it has done in the past because they haven't had a lot of rain here. And this golf course does dry. I mean, we've had years here where it's absolutely hammered down. And within a day, 24 hours, it's playing. You know, the fairways are rolling out quite nicely. Yeah, yeah. It's got an amazing drainage system here.
Yeah, these coastal tracks often do, don't they?
I think it could be plenty of roll on the fairways this week. And they are saying, where before it would be like 10.5 on the stimp, the fact sheet this week's come back saying 12.5 to 13 on the stimp.
Well, yeah. That shows you it must be fairly dry out there, mustn't it?
Mm. So we might have faster greens. It's a Tom Fazio redesign. So I've got on the preview available at Golf Betting System. Just type Golf Betting System, Golf Betting Tips into a search engine, you'll find us. There's a list of Fazio designs. There's also a Fazio variable, who's played best on Fazio golf courses over the last 5 years on our predictor model, which of course you can use free of charge. The greens here are large, 7,200 square feet on average. And the fairways are quite large, but they do pinch. Which I find fascinating, and we'll go into that again in a while as well. The other course is the Plantation course. That's a little bit more inland. It's more tree-lined. It's more of a parkland course. It's an easier course as well. It's a par 72 at 7,060 yards. They can take it apart. It played last year as the seventh easiest on the PGA Tour. Davis Love actually did a renovation job on this 2019, and they're saying that it plays a little bit harder. The greens are a lot more contoured. But in terms of average score, it didn't make any difference at all last year, which was the first year they played it after the Wren. Okay. Now, this is what I like about this golf tournament. It's the winning prices.
Mm.
Just the names. Tyler Duncan, 200-1, Tour Maiden. Charles Howell III, 50-1. He hadn't won for, I think it was 11 and a half years.
Yeah.
Austin Cook, Tour Maiden, 90-1. Mackenzie Hughes, Tour Maiden, 250-1. Kevin Kisner, Tour Maiden, 22-1. He was 24th in the world when he won that. That was the year where he was absolutely just kept getting beat. Finishing second, finishing third, losing in playoffs. And eventually he came back from China, where he'd finished second again at a WGC and won his local event at 22-1. I was on him. Robert Streb, 2014, a maiden, 75-1. And we can go back to Tommy Gainey, 2 gloves, 200-1 he won here in 2012. He again, another Tour Maiden. So I'm not saying that Tour Maidens are an exclusive list this week, but there's a lot of them.
There's some juicy prices in there as well.
It averages out over the last 10 years at 105-1.
Mm.
Now, why am I chasing Webb Simpson at 9-1 win only?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the game, does it?
Doesn't compute, does it, on the basis of that? Now, Tyler Duncan beat Webb Simpson by a shot last year, and Charles Howell probably beat Webb by a shot or two the year before, but just, I don't know. There's also some trends here in terms of, I've never seen a winner of this, that I mean, clearly with Tour Maidens as well, I've never seen a player that's won another event on the PGA Tour that calendar year going on to win this. So again, another reason I don't like Simpson.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, with such juicy prices, this is an angle I quite like as well. A lot of the winners here seem to be based in the southern states. So last year, Tyler Duncan, he lives in Florida, even though he's from upstate, but he's based in Florida. That much is for certain. Robert Streb was Floridian. Austin Cook from Arkansas. Corey Hughes. I'm getting my Canadians mixed up. Oh, dear. Hughes, when he won, he lived in North Carolina. Gainey, when he won, South Carolina boy. Ben Crane, Texas. They're all based in the southern states. So I looked at someone like a Maverick McNealy, who was in the top 10 for strokes tee to green in Houston, playing some nice stuff, decent putter. I could back Maverick, and then you think, well, he lives in Las Vegas and he's a Californian. It doesn't fit the mould of the winner. You know, so there's ways of putting, I don't know if they're the right ways, but there's name, you know, this game is all about putting lines through names, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's some stuff there that puts me against players from outside. I mean, Scott Piercy's playing some very nice stuff, but again, Piercy, Las Vegas man, there's reasons not to back players just on trends that we've seen of previous winners here. Also, we've got a situation here where winners have done well recently, but not crazy well. I mean, that's Kisner, yeah, okay, second at the WGC, comes and wins this. That's why he was 22-1, I get that. But even with someone like a Tyler Duncan, Duncan had actually finished in September a top 10 on the Corn Ferry. Charles Howe, he'd finished fifth in October at the CIMB Classic. We had Austin Cook, he'd finished in the top 10 at the Webb at the Corn Ferry Finals in October. So there's players there coming with a level of a top 10 result in a recent performance, yeah? So a level of confidence there.
Yeah.
Even if it was a Corn Ferry level. Don't forget, we're now in a COVID time where we're not seeing Corn Ferry players being promoted this year. But clearly, this was one of the earlier events in a lot of players' histories when they just joined the main tour. Mackenzie Hughes being another one again, but Hughes had finished in the top 10 at the Boise Open on the Corn Ferry. You then go back to Kisner, that's second, and Robert Streb before him. He'd finished 10th the outing before at the Shriners. So I like to see someone that's banged in a top 10 in the last 5 to 6 weeks. Not too much to ask, is it?
No.
But that actually, from a price perspective, you're still getting players at triple digits that have done well recently.
Yeah.
Because we've got a field that's of better quality at the top. Mm. And I don't know about you, I just read some of these names. Tyler Duncan. Well, if you'd have said to me before this, before he won, what was Tyler Duncan? I'd said to him, well, he's brilliant off the tee. It's tons and tons of fairways. And guess what? He hits tons and tons of greens, but he can't putt and his chipping's rubbish. What about Charles Howe? Well, Charles Howe can be one of the worst drivers known to man. But when he's actually on it, Howe, he's pretty long and he's pretty straight. And guess what? When he won this, it was one of those phases. He was actually ranking in the top 50 for fairways hit in the season he won it.
Yeah.
He was eating green.
Found something in his long game.
Exactly. So there we go. We've got two there, just tee to green merchants, effectively. Kevin Kisner's the same. When Kevin Kisner's bang on it, his irons are crisp. We know that he hits tons and tons and tons of fairways. So I get this picture here of players. You just want metronomic players from tee to green. The other thing is, a lot of them aren't long off the tee either. 292 average Duncan last year. He was 143rd in the driving distance rankings. We had before that Cook. He's another one. At 148th, he ranked in the driving distance charts. We had another one before that in terms of Hughes, not overly long off the tee. I don't think it's a bomber's golf course. And you can kind of also see that in the way that we break down the top 10 skills each week, or we drop down the skills across the last 10 years. Well, I've taken Kisner, Cook, Hughes, Howell and Duncan because it was 2015 when they brought in this two-course rotor.
Yeah.
Here are the tournament skill averages. 41st for driving distance. Now, how often do you see that on the PGA Tour? Mm. It's normally, what, 8, 10?
Yeah.
Bombers.
Yeah.
Driving accuracy, 10th. How often do you see that on the PGA Tour?
Those two numbers have just been flipped, haven't they, effectively?
Greens in reg, 13th. Proximity to hole, 10th. So people that can get their irons nice and close. Scrambling, 15th. Putting average, 9th. And if you look at it from a strokes gained perspective across the same time period, bearing in mind they don't take strokes gained on the plantation course. It's the 54 holes that they take on the seaside course. Strokes gained off the tee, 25th. It's like, whoa. That's normally single digits. Approach, 18th. Around the green, 26th. Tee to green, 9th. Strokes gained putting 12th. So it's like an all-rounding kind of performance.
Yeah, so, certainly not one that's overly compensating the bombers by the looks of it.
No, that's the kind of thing that put me off Sam Burns to a certain extent because Burns was tempting. He was 80-1, I saw.
Yeah.
But Burns, he is an elite-level driver of the golf ball. And he's hitting the ball 320 and he's relatively straight. But I don't know if the course really stacks up for him on that basis. Scotty Scheffler did well here last year, but Scheffler, again, is another one that hits it a long way. But Scheffler is ridiculously accurate. You know, he's up there with like a Dustin Johnson in terms of total driving numbers.
Yeah,
I think Burns is a bit more erratic. So that's why I didn't go for Burns in the end. I'm just going for players, though, that are consistent from tee to green and guys that have got top 10s recently. That's kind of where I've come down with this. If you can hear my son, it's we're doing homeschooling at the moment because we're in lockdown. I do apologise. So I have gone for 5. And in a way, it's quite an exciting week because there's some juicy options out there. I'm seeing lots of players getting well-backed this week. First one, Henrik Norlander. Now, I've been talking about Henrik Norlander now. It must be going on 6 months. And whenever I back him, he's awful. That doesn't mean he can't win the RSM Classic, though.
No, keep the faith.
Miscut, but he was fourth a few weeks ago at the Sanderson Farms. And actually, when you look at his results, the way that that guy plays golf is he hits a mass of fairways, a mass of greens, and then the rest of it is sketchy at best.
Yeah, it was
but that's the kind of profile we're looking for.
That's your Tyler Duncan mould, isn't it?
You got it. Three of his last four top 10 finishes have come on Bermuda grass. Here at Sea Island, where he was fifth in 2019. Ninth at Wailea Country Club, the Sony Open. And fourth a few weeks ago at the Country Club of Jackson. And his record here is second in 2016, 54th, 54th and fifth. He missed one cut. So a second and a fifth in five appearances here at Sea Island on the seaside course. What is there not to like? There was 150-1 about him with Paddy Power. First show. As soon as they saw William Hill come out at eight places each way, 125-1, they instantly locked 25 points off it. So I've got him at 125-1 on the eight places with Paddy Power. He's not that price anymore as we're recording this. I'm seeing him as short as 80s on Paddy Power.
Wow.
He's been walloped.
Yeah. Popular guy.
He'll miss the cut. Another one that I like. Now, this guy is a second-year tour player. I've never backed him before. You'll know him as well because you put a lot of stats together for the Predictor. Again, this guy is fantastic from tee to green. Great irons, great driver, very, very high greens in regulation kind of guy. He actually made the Northern Trust last season. So he made the top 25, 125 in the FedEx Cup, which for a rookie is never a bad shout on your first season, is it? One top 10, four top 20s. But it was his results on coastal courses that made me really perk up. 47th at Mayakoba, 14th here at Sea Island, 32nd at the Sony Open, 30th at Torrey Pines. I remember that. He was third after 2 days at Torrey Pines, mixing it with the very best in the world. 11th at Pebble Beach, 6th at Cocoa Beach, which is where they played the Puerto Rico Open, 33rd at Harbour Town. So he's never missed a cut by the coast. Then you look where he grew up. I think he grew up in Columbus, South Carolina, which is no more than like a 45-minute journey from the coast. Mm. And he is clearly a local kind of guy, and his record on Sea Island is crazy. Absolutely crazy. As an amateur, he finished 4th, 5th and 2nd at the Jones Cup, which they play next door at the Ocean Forest Golf Club. And he went to the University of South Carolina, so he was involved in the SEC, the Southeastern Conference for Universities. And at the SEC Championship, which they play on the seaside course each and every year, he finished 20th in 2013, 21st in 2014, 1st in 2015, and 13th in 2016. So if you want a young, talented player that is kind of underexposed in terms of price, is growing in confidence on the PGA Tour in his second year, bearing in mind, I think he was 8th at the Shriners a few weeks ago. Yeah, he was. And the Shriners was loaded, yeah? Absolutely loaded with quality. 17th at the Sanderson Farms, 8th at the Shriners. Yes, he missed the cut at Houston. Couldn't care less. You look at last year here on his... It would have been, his 4th or 5th PGA Tour start. He shot 7-under-65 on the plantation. He shot a 5-under-65 on the seaside course. And he finished 14th. I think if you put him in the same kind of... If he's in the same kind of state now, with the confidence and the momentum he's got and just feeling comfortable on the tour, I can see this Neesmith chap getting right into the mix this week.
Yeah, well, he certainly made a decent case for him, Steve, I must say. There's a lot to like there, isn't there?
There is a lot to like. I know that there's one of the guys on the group. Did you see that post? He's backed both Norlander and Neesmith in this. on the exchange. And the amounts he wins is pretty crazy.
Not
that's his only two selections.
Right, okay.
This week at the RSM.
Yeah.
Geddin. Is it Geddin Evans? Someone like that?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, he, that's who he's backed. Those two, Norlander and Neesmith. He, by the way, he posted that after I'd put my tips up. Not that much in any way, shape, or
form. It followed you instantly.
I don't copy other people's tips or whatever. Then I've gone for Austin Cook. He's obvious enough, isn't he? He's a winner here 3 years ago. Yeah. And again with Austin Cook, hits tons and tons of fairways. And when he's in good nick, hits tons and tons of greens. And we know he's a great Bermuda grass specialist. He's from Arkansas. You know, again, he's another one like Neesmith, who's got a great, a whole list of great finishes, top 20 finishes, both at that SEC Championship and at that Jones Cup next door. Another one of those. He's 80-1. I got him at 80-1 with Paddy Power, 8 places each way. Bearing in mind, he was second, wasn't he, 2 outings ago at the Shriners Open, where he made the playoff with Wolf and Laird. He made the cut on the number at the Houston Open, then he finished the weekend 68-66 at the Houston Open, which was the seventh best in the field. Bearing in mind, he was playing or mixing it in terms of scores with the likes of Ortiz, who won, Dustin Johnson, I don't know if you've heard of him, Hideki Matsuyama, Tyrrell Hatton and Brooks Koepka. They were the guys that beat him for scoring over the weekend in Houston. So he comes here with momentum as well. So I love Austin Cook this week. Another player I really like the look of, who's a maiden. When I looked at the betting this morning, he was the shortest priced maiden in this field, unless I've really missed someone. Doc Redman.
Yeah.
And in Doc Redman, we've got a player that's finished. He's had 3 top 4 finishes in his last 7 appearances on the PGA Tour. He's
been playing some good stuff, hasn't he?
Very good stuff. Third at the Wyndham. In August, Bermuda grass greens. He then shot a 10 under 62 at the Safeway Open to get a backdoor for a third spot there, which was the first tournament of this new season. And the one that really got me, though, was that performance a few weeks ago at the Bermuda Championship. Coastal, Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens, short golf course. Lots and lots of wind on the Friday and the Saturday, gusting up to 25 miles an hour. And he was first first going into Sunday. So he played very nicely in the worst. That's one thing I haven't mentioned. I do apologise. We look like we've got wind on our hands this week. Not personally, but in terms of the forecast for this tournament. Thursday, it looks like it's gusting up to 20 throughout the day. Bearing in mind, I mean, it's not going to be overly cold, but it's 17, 18 degrees Celsius on Thursday and it's blowing 20 mile an hour. 21 degrees Celsius on the Friday, again, 15 to 20. Saturday, it's gusting up to 25 miles an hour. And on Sunday, anything up to 15, so it gets a bit calmer on the Sunday. But that, for me, is 54 holes in pretty, I wouldn't say tough win, but enough win that's going to upset quite a lot of the players. They won't like it.
It's going to make them think, particularly on a coastal track, it tends to be accentuated as well. So,
well, especially if they're going to keep these, especially if it's going to be playing firm and fast, relatively. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that they might get the old hoses out if they need to for the greens, but they, you know, it's not as if the guys here at these golf courses don't know how quick they can get those stimps in on this coastal golf course, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, it must be blowing 15 to 20 here most of the time.
Yeah, you'd have thought so. Coming off the same.
Redman. Back to Redman. I just... Even if you go back into his amateur days at uni, he had 2 wins as a freshman. He had one on a coastal golf course, the Kanpali Golf Club in Lahaina, Hawaii. He won the Kanpali Collegiate Classic. You know, a golf course which is literally next to the beach in Hawaii. And then he won the Jack Rabbit as well in 2016, which is played on the Dunes course in Valentine, Nebraska. And yeah, Nebraska's nowhere near the sea, I get that. But you look, you just type the Prairie Club Dunes course into Google, look at the images and look at the golf course. It is an absolute faux lynx. It's, you know, it just looks just like a lynx golf course with heather and all manner of fescue and all sorts of stuff on the golf course. Tilted greens and fairways, uneven. And Redmond won there. It's just, there's just this thing about him. It seems to me that just in his amateur days and just the way that his career's coming together and he's clearly gaining confidence on the PGA Tour and as a professional, he could be ripe for a win this week. And last year here, the first time he ever played at Sea Island, he shot 66, 65, 66 over the first 3 days. He was in eighth spot after 54 holes. He went out in the third last group on Sunday with Scottie Scheffler and the eventual winner, Tyler Duncan. And where Tyler thrived, Doc, through the lack of experience back then, because he didn't do any Korn Ferry. He literally got a special temporary membership, didn't he, after second at the Rocket Mortgage. Jumped straight into this.
Straight in.
You know, two-footed, no experience as a pro, and he was just learning on the job. But I think if you put him in the same circumstances this time around and he got into the contention or in the second or third from last group, I think he'd hang around. Because, you know, he's just clearly feeling far more comfortable at this level. Mm. He's from North Carolina, by the way, so he fits that as well. So I've gone for Doc Redman. And finally, top of the list, top of the betting... he was the last to make my team. I was going to go for this route where basically 66 to 1 was my best, was my shortest price, and we just ride it out. But I just couldn't resist Russell Henley.
Now, you were on him a few weeks back as well, weren't you, from memory?
45 to 1 we landed him, didn't we, at the Zozo?
That's right, Yeah, played well, didn't he?
He'd finished third at the CJ Cup. He then finished fourth at the Zozo. And he currently sits 58th in the world official world golf ranking. Mm.
Yeah. Motivation.
With the best will in the world, why are a lot of these players playing here this week? Your Justin Roses. Your Tommy Fleetwoods. They're playing here, really, because they've got nowhere else to play. They've got a PGA Tour requirement where they have to add new tournaments to their schedule. In the guise of Fleetwood and in the guise of Rose, they're trying to find some form, aren't they? Let's be honest about it. They've had a year where they've struggled. You look at Henley. I know he's short, but 28 to 1 I thought was backable. Considering he was short as 18 to 1 at the Houston Open, even though he'd never played the golf course. Yeah. He has got an absolute target to hit this week. He's got this week, or in a fortnight, he's got the OHL Classic. Those are the two tournaments that Russell Henley has got to get into the world's top 50 before Christmas, to get that Augusta invite to land on his mat the week before Christmas, and you'll see the photo on Instagram, yeah? To get into the WGCs, it's, you know as well as I do, getting into the world top 50 just opens the door every big event, doesn't it?
Yeah. For the guys who don't make the Tour Championship, it's got to be the target, isn't it, for the back end of the year.
So why do I like Henley so much? Well, clearly he lives on Kiawa Island in South Carolina. So he lives just up the coast. Clearly lives by the sea, must play a lot of links golf in his practice rounds. I wouldn't be surprised if he nips down to SEC quite regularly to the training centre as well. It's only probably an hour's drive. And then you just look at his record. 2010 Southeastern Conference Championship, he won it as an amateur. He played for the University of Georgia. Okay. He then backed that up in 2011, finishing sixth. And then on his PGA Tour visits here to the RSM Classic, he's finished fourth in 2014, sixth in 2015, and 10th in 2016. So six appearances, three top tens, and he's earned £573,000 in RSM prize money on this golf course. There's not a lot not to like, really, is there?
No. He's been playing some good stuff as well, hasn't he? That much is clear.
Seventh at the Workday, ninth at the Wyndham, eighth at Northern Trust, third at the CJ Cup, fourth at the Zozo. He has jumped, since the Travellers' Championship in June, he has jumped 130-odd spots in the official world golf rankings. And you're now saying to him, Russell, it's probably one of the most favourite golf courses of it that you play. You've had success here. You've won here as an amateur. You've had top 10 finishes here galore. And by the way, Russell, if you can win this week or get a top two, top three finish, you're going to be right on the world cusp of the world's top 50. And you're going to, it's just black and white. It's clear. It's a target, isn't it?
Yeah. Go out and perform, boy.
Go out and perform. Just go out and do what you've been doing, tee to green. You're one of the best tee to green games players on the planet right now, Russell. Try and get a few putts to drop because that's been your weakness. Bearing in mind that when you look at his record here, he's actually got some very positive strokes gain numbers on this golf course. Just go out there and play your game, Russell, and you're going to be there or thereabouts. It's true, I think. So, yeah, I put Henley in at the top. So, Henley, Redman, Austin Cook, Matt Neesmith, and Henrik Norlander. Those are my five for the RSM Classic. Who do you like this week?
Well, I've only backed one so far, but I'm quite excited about him, I must say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and listening to a lot of your rationale, it kind of fits in with the bulk of it as well, because he's a maiden. This track here was the scene of his best PGA Tour finish back in 2017 behind... behind Austin Cook. He shot a 62 that day.
He's
also shot a 64, and he's shot a couple of 65s. Go. See if you can get to it by the time
I'm... Oh, I know, it is already. That's the beauty of him there. You've gone for JJ Spawn.
JJ Spawn, yeah, absolutely. So he shot 62.
On him a few outings ago, Spawn. Yeah, T. Green, he's been playing some good stuff, yeah.
He has been playing some good stuff, yeah. Mm. So, going back JJ to that, Spawn. He shot 62.
Price you got, what price you got on JJ?
350-1.
Jesus. No.
Well, I'll start again. 2017, the scene of his best PGA Tour finish when he finished second here to Austin Cook. He shot a 62 that week. Mm. In his other three appearances, he's also shot a 64 and a couple of 65. So he gets on with the track. He's got a couple of pro wins, but not at PGA Tour level, which kind of fits in with what you were talking before. Flashed some form at the Safeway Open. He was ninth there. And again, tying into your assertion about tee to green, he was second for driving accuracy, sixth for greens regulation, and fifth for strokes gained tee to green that week. 56th for the Corrales after that, which wasn't so good, but he shot a second round 67, which was one of the better rounds of the day. And to top it all, he welcomed a new daughter into the world Saturday just gone. Mm-hmm. And celebrated that with a sponsor's invite into play this week. So late into the field, new baby, likes the course, mad price, stranger things have happened. I'm quite happy to take 350-1 about JJ Spawn and see what occurs this week. So, yeah, he's the only one I've backed so far. And the ones that caught the eye, Streelman, Will Gordon caught the eye, James Hahn. I may well have a little bit of action on some of those guys because, they, again, price-wise, they kind of fit in with the numbers you were talking about before. But
the beauty, though, this week. It's like a finger food buffet. It's all in play. You can go as deep as you want if you can find a rationale for it.
There's a lot of money for Pat and Kazai this week. I've seen a lot of people mention him as well. So there's some juicy, bigger prices.
I actually said to Barry on Friday, doing my prep, that Pat and Kazai was one that I would put in. But the only thing I do not like about Kazai, bearing in mind he has won here again in the SEC, I believe, he just isn't straight enough off the tee.
Mm.
It's his driving. He struggles. He's always struggles with the driver, Keziah.
Which, doesn't really fit in with the angle that you've approached it at. But yeah, there's certainly been some good money from this last day.
I wouldn't be surprised in there. Stuart Sink's another one. He's been playing some awesome golf. He's available at three numbers. You've got Harry Higgs. There's so many. There's so many you could have a punt on this week. It's one of those.
Even
G-Mac's been showing the odd. G-Mac's been showing the odd spark recently, and he's out at 150-1.
Yeah, he likes a coastal test, doesn't he? Bit of wind.
Absolutely. Well, that's us done, I think. Barry couldn't make it, so that's a shame. I think he's still depressed from his Masters bets.
Aren't we all? No, it actually wasn't too bad, was it?
Wasn't too bad. But I hope your picks go well at the at the Jobo.
Best of luck for yourself.
This is the second last tournament on the PGA Tour. I just would love. I've been banging crossbars and posts, as have you. It'd be great for both of us just to snare a winner before we disappear into the December fog. It would be nice.
It would be very nice.
Thank you for your time, Paul. Thank you for your efforts as ever.
Best of luck.
And thank you to all the listeners. 5-star reviews. Always, always up for 5-star reviews. If you could spend 25, 35, 45 seconds just clicking on the 5 stars and writing a review for us, we'd really appreciate it. It just helps to keep the momentum of the growing download numbers. I mean, we had our best ever Masters record numbers on the downloads. So thank you to everyone for listening. And those 5-star reviews are a great one of the reasons why it's happening, because, you know, it just helps with the algorithm and getting the podcast far more in the general public's eye. So thank you to everyone that gives us those 5-star reviews. We will see you again in a fortnight, because there is, I don't know, we might just do it. You've got an event next week.
We can squeeze.
We'll do a podcast next week. It will just be on the European Tour. So we'll be back next week for that. And we hope that your bets go well. Goodbye.